morning, church. Good to see everybody this morning. If you're visiting with us, we mentioned last week that we're starting a whole series for the next 6 months on worship and dedicating every Sunday to that. Obviously, we do that anyway, but spending time in the sermon talking about worship, at least now until the end of the end of July. And last week, I said Super Sunday was the first Sunday in August, and that was not true. It's the last Sunday in July. So if you marked your calendar, erase it. If you did it in pen, get a new calendar. And circle the last Sunday in July. So that's our Super Sunday. And also, you want to circle Easter this year. I think that's April 21st. Anybody got a phone they pulled up already? Is it April 21st? Yep. Good old Faye. April 21st, Easter. So you want to mark that as well. That is our combined service. And so those of us in here and those of us down the hallway, we're all going to cram in here, and we're going to figure out a really good way to do that. And if you've ever wondered and you want to take a look around Nashville, I do not know of a church who is attempting to do this well. I know of churches who are attempting to meet together in the same auditorium, Spanish-speaking and English-speaking. I know that churches have done that. You don't have to get me after church and say, hey, our church did that. That's great. I already know that. But there are not a lot of churches who are attempting to do this well. And I put some emphasis on the word well. And just because you do something doesn't mean you're good at it. So we want to do it and do it well. So we have to think about it during the week and figure out how we're going to do it well and figure out how does the singing work and how does the praying work, how does the Lord's Supper work. And so we're doing it on Easter. And so if you can circle your calendar for that date, I would like for everybody to try to be here too. Both days we come, we have combined service, we eat. We go home and we don't come back. So, you know, those are the two big days. As the guy who preaches two services, I love these days. So, April 27th, the last Sunday in July, you want to have both of those circled. When you talk about worship, there's usually a lot of ways you can do this. And so I thought we were going to go one way, and then I decided I didn't want to do that. Here's the first way we can usually talk about worship. What is it? And we can go through all that. So let me kind of give you a rundown real quick so I don't have to spend any other weeks doing it. I'll just give you a rundown, then we get to the important stuff. When we talk about worship, what is worship? When I say worship, what does that mean? And so if you just look at the different ways to talk about worship in the Bible, what is that? So there's the Hebrew word shakach, which means to bow down. And you can see this in the text. So if you look at the Psalms, and I've put two translations up there, so you can see when one psalm says to bow down, there's another translation with the same text that translates that as worship. You see it in the New Testament when Jesus is on the sea and he does something incredible and the disciples worshiped him saying, truly you are the Son of God. They literally bowed down. So that's what worship is. You just bow. Here's another way we do it. The Hebrew word afad, which means to serve. This is a pretty popular text. Deuteronomy 10, 12 through 13. So fear the Lord and walk in his ways. Serve the Lord. That idea of serving, that's worship. How about this text, which most of us know? Remember Romans 12, 1? And Paul says he tells them all to devote themselves. This is the NIV says this is your spiritual act of worship. But if some of you have a King James, y'all know that the King James says this is your act of service. So again, it's worship is bowing down. Worship is serving. But worship is also fearing. It's also being afraid, or it's also giving reverence, if you go back to this same text. Or you look in Acts. You notice I'm flying through this, which means I didn't want to dwell on this at all. If you look in Acts 13, one translation says fear, another translation says worship. When you have these different translations, it tells us these are just the different ways to think about it. Last one, when we talk about worship, maybe. There it is. Psalm 136:1. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good. His love endures forever. The word yatha in Hebrew. Give hands. You ever been in a church service and you see somebody, you know, some crazy person in the third row or something raising their hands to the song? I say crazy because that was me. I used to tell my dad, you know, I got the spirit, raise my hand. He usually told me to get rid of it and put my hands down. Usually, you know, you're singing a song and you feel good, and all of a sudden, you know, I got my eyes closed, my hands go up. You know, it's like I can't control it. You know, I don't know what that is, but I had it, whatever it was. So in Hebrew, it's how they express that is yathah. You know, it's you are giving thanks to someone. You are thanking them. You know, open palm. My dog does that. You know, she sits on her hind legs and just shakes like this. You know, it's just like she gives me hands. I think in her little mind, you know, she's thanking me. Either that or she's running from Jaheim. It's one of the two. But it's humans do it. It's this natural response that God gave us to thank. We're just thankful. So what is worship? Well, worship is fearing, worship is serving, worship is bowing down, worship is giving thanks. And I gotta be honest with you. There's been some church services that I got on my knees when we prayed. I've seen some of you do it. There are some church services, a lot of us, when we pray, we bow our heads, you know, in reverence. There are some of us who raise our hands when we sing. So when we talk about worship, we can talk about what it is. We can also talk about what form it takes. But here's the problem. When we talk about worship, if all we do is concentrate on what it is or what we look like when we do it, then what we've done is pretty much spend the whole time talking about what we do and who we are. Worship is not about you, first and foremost. Worship is about the one we're raising our hands to, right? Worship is about the one we're bowing our head to. Worship is about the one we're on bended knee to. Worship is about the one being worshiped. And the problem with talking about what it is or how we do it is that we leave out the one that we're doing it to. So this morning, we got like 24 or 25 weeks we're going to talk about worship. And I'm sure there's plenty of time to talk about how this is going to take place. And I think a conversation on the form of worship is important. And we're going to get to that. But what I would like to do first is to talk about the one we're worshiping and why he actually deserves our worship. My father, who's a minister in Northern Virginia, has taught classes on worship multiple times. And he shared with me this past week, he said, Adam, every class I've ever taught on worship, I gave out a survey. And in the survey, I had one question, and here it is. If God had never done anything for you, ever, nothing at all, does he still deserve your worship? He said, overwhelmingly, the answer has been no. Overwhelmingly. Now, I didn't ask y'all to rate. We didn't take a survey in here. But what do you think? If God has done, where I come from, if God did squat for you, okay, he didn't do nothing for you. Excuse the English. Neither one of those made sense. But you see what I'm saying. God didn't do anything for you. Do you still got to worship him? I think we have to get past this. Our first response is, well, yeah. And then you think about it and you say, well, I don't know. Does he get our worship if he didn't do anything? What if he did everything? I'm getting to it, Taylor. I'm coming. What if he did things against you and not for you at all? Does he deserve your worship now? I think we have to. I was kind of on the fence. Yes, wait, no, maybe. I don't know. Here's the problem. This is the devil's definition of worship. The devil's definition of worship is if God does something for you, it's like wages. You owe him worship. And whoever does the most, you got to give them worship. Let me show you how I know this. You remember when he comes and he meets Jesus? And you remember the line? All of this I will give you if you bow down and worship. The devil thinks this is an exchange. If I give you everything, you owe me, or you owe me, and then I'll give you everything. This is how this works. And you remember Jesus says that's not how worship works. You worship the Lord your God, that's it. Jesus didn't say anything about wages. And if you think this is the only time the devil talks about worship, you'd be wrong. Because he was spouting this stuff way back when. You remember the story of Job? The devil comes up, he's talking one-on-one with God, and they have this conversation. You remember how God starts the conversation? Have you seen my servant Job? He's a good guy. Y'all ever talk about, you know, somebody in your family, you got to brag on it? Anybody ever have pictures of the grandkids in the phone you have to show everybody multiple times? Yeah. and you show, you know, and they're this person, they can do no wrong. And God's like bragging on the grandkids. Oh, Job, he can do no wrong. No, he's got a used camel store. He's got other shops. He's got all these kids. He prays for his kids, even when they have lavish parties. I mean, God says, I have got nobody like Job. And this is the classic line from Job 1:9. The devil says, I'll bet that Job won't worship you for nothing. This is the devil's definition of worship. Of course Job is a good guy. You give him everything. You know, you protect him, you give him long life, you give him a good business. What would happen if Job was in business in 2008 and 9? What would happen if Job was alive in 1929 when the market crashed? What would happen if Job lost his kids like some of you have? What would happen then? Really easy to worship God when he's done everything for you. I'd like to see Job worship you when you do nothing for him. And God says, bet. And if you think this wasn't a bet that went on, read it. It's a bet. Sure. Deal. And they bet. And Job loses everything. And his wife doesn't understand. If God doesn't do anything for you, you don't owe him nothing. You remember her classic line? Just curse God and die. You know what the real Hebrew is? Bless God and die. Your English changes it because they don't like that. But she's being sarcastic. Just bless God and die. Church, if our idea of worship is the only reason we do it is because God did something for us, then we've got that from the wrong source. If you pay attention to the text, God thinks that some people deserve honor, not because of what they've done, but because of who they are, right? Let's think about it. Honor thy father and mother. Is it because daddy did so much for you? Is it because mama gave birth to you? Yes, no. It's because they're your mom and they're your father. And there are some people who have daddy issues. There are some people whose mother has never, ever loved them. The problem is that we don't owe them our respect and our honor because of what they have or have not done for you. This is the real sticking point. We owe them just because they're your mom and they're your dad. And this gets to the point when they get 85 and 87 and 89 and then not some of you are 89, I'm not talking about you, them other people, and 91, and then you get the phone call and they say, your mother cannot do X, Y, and Z, what would you have us to do? And then for the first time, a lot of us are faced with the decision, do I just let mom and dad go and let some others deal with them? Or do I take now them upon myself? These are real questions, and it has to do with worship. Because there's some things we owe mom and dad because they mom and dad. That's the only reason you owe them. And a lot of us have this issue, well, they didn't ever do anything for me. I don't care. We owe mom and dad. We owe them just because they're mom and dad. Let's go the other way. There are some people we owe just because of who they are. And there are some people you need to leave alone just because of who they are. How about, let's look at a couple of Proverbs. Like snow in summer, which doesn't make sense. Like rain in the harvest, which we don't want, honor is not fit for a fool. There are some people, church, that just don't deserve your honor, and you know who they are, don't you? They don't have to do anything. They're fools. They're just fools. Stay away from them. We have a bad habit in this country of honoring fools. We crown fools. How about this one? This is one of my favorite Proverbs. When you sit to dine with a king, note well who you are sitting with. And if you are prone to gluttony, put a knife to your throat. Notice who you're sitting with. And if you have a habit of just stuffing your face and looking like an idiot at dinner, maybe you ought to restrain thyself. He doesn't say because of what they did for you. He says, notice who you're sitting with. when I was real little, we didn't go out much. We had family of five, and my dad was a preacher, which means he made like 12 cents a week or something, you know, and we went to school uphill both ways, whatever it is. But when we went out to eat, I knew it's because somebody in the church paid. I was 8 years old, and I knew that. My dad didn't make that a secret. You know, we would go out, and my dad would say, here's how this operates. Most of the time, I thought we wore our Sunday best because we were getting taken out for lunch. Growing up, that's what I thought, because we're going out to lunch somewhere. And I had this habit when I was that young. I would get done. I was a kid. What did I know? I mean, I got done. I would look to Dad, and I said, when are we leaving? Or I would say, I'm done. Like they were all there for me, you know. By the way, that's how 6, 7, and 8-year-olds think. If you want them to think differently, you have to teach them differently, moms and dads. They won't grow out of that. You have to nudge them out of that. Yeah, I'm just letting you know in case that was lost on you. So at 8, I said, I'm done. And I remember my dad, I remember the restaurant. I remember what it was called. I remember where I was sitting. I remember what everything looked like. He looked at me. He said, hey, come here. Side note, anytime my dad said, hey, come here, bad thing, bad. So I got up, and I went over, and he whispered in my ear, he said, son, when somebody pays for lunch, they decide when we leave. Sit down and shut up. I didn't understand that. Why? Just because they pay, they get to decide? Is that still the rule? Yeah, I think so. And sometimes a lot of times when I got older, I thought, I'm paying so I can decide when we go. You know, I want to do that. But in our minds, we don't like this because we like to do what we want. Some people just get to make decisions for you. Really? This is why I think our worship is taking a hit, because our own mentality in the world is taking a hit. No matter who pays, I decide when I leave. We need to learn what honor is, what fear is, and what reverence is. Some people we respect and honor just because of who they are. Last one, and I know this is a text that most of us know, and I know I hadn't really told y'all anything yet, I'm just kind of ranting. But I had to rant for a week just so I can get to where I want to go next week. In Romans 13, let me read you what Paul says. Paul says, everyone must submit thyself, everyone submit himself to the governing authorities. There is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. They're God's servants to do you good. If you do wrong, you should be afraid. He does not bear the sword for nothing. In other words, if you got in trouble, you got in trouble. Don't try to get out of it. Don't whine about it. You did it. It happened. Pay the price. Pay the fine. Just pay the fine. He says, he is God's servant, an agent of wrath to bring punishment on the wrongdoer. I'm not going to lie. I got pulled over a little while ago, and I thought to myself, you're an agent of wrath to bring punishment on me for speeding. I didn't tell him that because I didn't want to even hire a fee. I didn't say nothing. Paul says it is necessary to submit to authorities not because of punishment, but because of conscience. We submit not because of what they can do. We submit just because of who they are. Paul says that's why you pay taxes. Because we're respecting those and who they are. I think it would be great if we could start this series today as I'm doing. Not talking about worshiping God because of what he's done for us. And we're going to get to that part. And by the way, God's responsible for a lot of this thinking. You know, remember how many times God says, I am the Lord who brought you out of Egypt? I mean, I know I'm saying we don't worship God just because of what he did, but the Lord had a habit of saying, you should pay attention to me because of what I did for you. So that's not totally out of the question. But before we can get to that, I think we need to realize that we worship God simply because of who he is. And let me run through that real quick, and then we're done. There's a reason we worship God, and it's because he fits the mold. He made the mold. Come, let us sing with joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before him with thanksgiving. Let us sing psalms and praise to him. the text that Luke read, it begins that way. Come, let us worship. Come, it's time to worship. And then, strategically, this psalm says, let me tell you why. And he never says, because he's done so much for y'all, because he's made your crops grow. He never says that. Come, let us worship. And let me tell you why. Here's number one. Because God made you. If he didn't do anything else for you, it's because he made you. It's like your mother. What does she ever do for me? She gave birth to you. That's it. Done. Conversation over. She gave birth. That's it. She wins every time. She wins every time. She gave birth. I was there for two of mine. I saw, hey, she wins. You got to do what she says. In this psalm, for the Lord is a great God. He is the great king above all gods. In his hands are the depths of the earth. Mountain peaks belong to him. The sea is his. Why? Because he made it. God is creator. So we all owe God this morning. Here, when we sing, when we pray, when we took communion, we owe him not because he did anything for you. We owe him because he made you. Period. But he did something else. There's that last line here in this little segment. God didn't just make you. God maintained you. Your mama didn't just give you birth. Your mama put clothes on your back. It's not like your mom gave birth. She let you walk around naked for 18 years. Didn't teach you how to read. Didn't teach you how to write. Didn't teach you how to talk. Didn't teach you any manners. It's not like that, is it? All of you are here and have clothing. So I assume somebody taught you how to do that. He didn't just make you. He helped you. He formed the dry land. Let me ask y'all a question. How many of you have ever had buyer's remorse? Went and bought a car, went and bought a house. Next morning you think, why'd she let me do that? Wasn't your fault, right? You know, why did anybody buy a dog and then regret it? I ain't gonna lie, I bought this dog like 2 weeks ago. I ain't gonna lie. 24 hours, I remember looking at this dog. Why'd I buy you? Why did I allow you in my life? Now I'm stuck. And I was going through my mind, who can I give you to? Where can I drop you off and just say you ran away? Going through all these little options. Because a lot of times we make this decision, and you know why we make that decision? Because the car looks so pretty. We can see ourselves driving it. Because the dogs look so cute. They ain't messed your floor up yet, right? They hadn't done all that stuff. And then the next morning you think, what'd I do that for? I ain't gonna lie, like, I can't give that dog up. Me and that dog are tied now. Like that, me and that dog is, you know, I love that dog. God never felt that way about you. God made you because he intended to make you. God knew what he was doing. When God makes something, when God does something, he's planned on doing it. It wasn't an impulse thing. Oh, I made Adam. Oh, man, what'd I make that for? Oh, man. I knew he's going to turn out like that. I knew he's going to end up talking like that. I knew he was going to do that. God knew that. God made you anyway. God wanted to make you, and God wants to help you. Jesus talks about this. Remember when Jesus talks about why do you stress? Why do you worry about what you will wear? Why do you worry about what you will eat? My Father has it under control, Jesus says. He knows how to do this. How about the prophet Isaiah? It's one of my favorite lines. Isaiah 14:24. God says, surely as I have planned, so it will be. Surely as I have purposed, so it will stand. If I plan it, it's going to happen. If God buys a car, he plans on making the payments. He's not surprised by the payments. There are a lot of us who bought it and think, I know it was going to be all that. I know it was going to be $505 a month. Oops. I guess we'll get it repoed. God don't do that. God doesn't do something halfway. God knows what the payment is. And he intends on paying it. Newsflash, he paid it. He knew the price and he paid it. God didn't just make you, God formed you. And when Jesus came, he reinforced this idea. Remember what he told his disciples? Hey, don't worry about it. I beat the world. I have overcome the world. I know what I'm doing and I know how to do it. God didn't just create you. God maintained you. But here's another reason why we owe God. It's not just because he creates, it's not because he maintains, because God's a judge. Any of y'all ever been in court? Has anybody, I told you I wouldn't let you show a hand, so I'll just tell you. Anybody ever been found in contempt of court? Did you know it's $2,500 when you get found in contempt? They don't tell you that on TV, do they? They tell you that when they mail it to you, though. Yeah, you get that in the mail. Try not paying that. Yeah, that'll double in a month. But pay that fee. And you know when you get a ticket, and at the bottom of it, it says if you'd like to go to, if you'd like to plead like not guilty, you can show up. Here's some advice: don't do that. Just pay the ticket. You're gonna lose. But if you feel like you can, go ahead. I mean, that's cool. I got it. When you get found in contempt, you don't get that option. You've been found in contempt. Pay this fine. If you don't pay this fine, it's gonna double. And if you don't pay the double fine, there's a warrant. I was looking on there like, how do I argue with this? Is there a mail-in or something? Is there a phone number I can call? No, there's no phone number. You know how hard that was for me to accept? That you can't argue about it? That you can't debate? That I can't have a hearing or something? No. I don't know if y'all have ever seen this video. He's passed away now, but there's a woman. It's a fantastic video, again, if you haven't seen it. February 2013, Penelope Soto appeared before Judge Jorge Rodriguez Chamath, and it was through video. So he's sitting on the bench, and they're FaceTiming her through because the court's so full. You know, you bring them out of jail; they don't have time to transport them. They got the video. They talk. They do your case, and then moving on. Okay. Don't watch it now. Just watch it after church. So Judge Chamath. They bring Miss Soto up, and she's been found in possession of drugs. And the judge says, do you have any money? Because you got multiple counts, and we're just going to make this one count. Okay? So he's already being nice. We're just going to make this one count. He said, it's $5,000. Do you have any money to pay this? She said, oh, yeah. And she's smiling and laughing. He said, how much do you have? She said, I have jewelry, and it's worth a lot of money, yo. And he says, are you on something? And she says, no. And he said, this isn't funny. This is not the club. This is not a laughing matter. You've been found with possession of drugs. And you're in jail. And we're trying you. And I need to know if you have anything. And so he looks at it some more. And he says, it's $5,000. And he tells her she's going to have to pay it. And that's it. And he's done, and she just stands there and looks at him, smiling and twirling her hair. I mean, he's done with her. And he looks at her, and he says, bye-bye. And with a big smile, she says, adios. And turns around to leave. And Judge Rodriguez Chamath says, bring her back. Bring her back. He says, give me that paper again. Give me that paper. He gets his pen and he says, this count is $10,000 fine, not $5,000. And she says, are you serious? And the judge says, oh, I'm very serious. Adios. And now Miss Soto is not smiling anymore, and she turns around to leave, and she offers him a gesture with her hand. I didn't say what it is because we're in church. And she says some words about him. And he says, bring her back again. Bring her back. And Miss Soto comes back to the camera, and now she's sitting with a slant, and she says, what's up? And he said, did you just say? And she said, oh, yeah, I said it. He said, okay. He said, give me that paper again. He said, I find you in criminal contempt, 30 days in jail. Now, Miss Soto owed the judge her reverence and honor before she ever walked in there. She didn't owe the judge because of what he could do. She didn't owe the judge because of what he had the power for. But actually, she did. She owes the judge reverence because he has the power to ruin your life if he wants to. Now, we can all judge and say that's not fair. She deserves this. She deserves this. And that's cool. We can all spend plenty of time having those political arguments. At the end of the day, the judge has the power. I don't know if y'all been in court. Judges are like human gods. They have the power to do whatever they want. You can argue with them, get some stuff overturned, but they can do whatever they want. It's like forest rangers. They got power too. Some of you know what I'm talking about. You don't report the right fish, you lose the boat. These people have power, and it just blows my mind how often we do not show people in authority respect. But God is judge, which means he has power. There were people who didn't understand this. You remember when Moses told Pharaoh? He said, we got to go worship Yahweh. And Pharaoh said, who's Yahweh? I don't know Yahweh. I don't know who that is. You know what I bet God thought? You will. Just wait. You will. How long did it take him? A little while later, Pharaoh says, hey, remember that Yahweh guy you were telling me about? Go on and worship him. I'm done. God has all power to judge you how he sees fit. Church, I think we owe him. Not because of what he's done, but because of what he could do. Here's the last one. We worship God because he's holy. Over 50 times in Ezekiel, God through the prophet says, they will know that I am Yahweh. They will all know. And this idea about exerting himself started all the way back in the Exodus. Remember the story of the burning bush? Moses shows up. What's the first thing God tells him? You're going to need to take them loafers off. Them shoes, we're not going to. Some of you don't like shoes in the house. God don't even like them in the mud room. Yeah, you're going to need to take them off. You notice Moses didn't say, what for? What for? No, just take them off. Why? Like our kids. Why? Moses didn't say that. Moses wasn't stupid. You just did. Why? Because you're standing in the presence of the Holy One. For the first time in your Bibles, the word holiness is mentioned in Exodus 3. It's not mentioned ever in Genesis. Holiness comes to the forefront at the burning bush. There's a reason you take your shoes off, because God is holy. And in the book of Hosea, God says, there's a reason I'm not going to kill you, because I'm holy. Because God is not man. Church, I want us to worship God, not because of what he's done for you. I want us to worship God simply because he's God. I didn't know this till this week. I looked up the rest of that Soto story. Miss Soto spent less than a week in jail. She got her a lawyer. She came into the courtroom, she brought her lawyer, and she had family, she had friends, and she appeared before his honor, Rodriguez Chamat. And she told him, she said, my behavior, your honor, was irrational, and I apologize not only to the family, not only to the court, but your honor, I apologize to you for my actions. Now, did she have to do that? Some of you saying, yes, she did not. She could sit in jail. She didn't have to do that. Does she owe him? Yeah. I don't know if she thought it was going to lessen her sentence, but I love how he responded. And Judge Chamat has now passed away. He passed away 2 years ago. But I want to read to you how he responded, because I thought that was the best part. He said, Ms. Soto, I am not sure you are entirely to blame for your behavior. That's when I thought, I saw the video. I kind of think it was her fault. He said, in fact, I'm willing to share the responsibility. I thought, dude, don't apologize. You did right. You showed her what's up. You did right. He said, I should not even call you totally responsible, and let me tell you why. Because we have taught you to speak the way you did. We live in a society where if you listen to music, every other word is profanity. We live in a society where young people like yourself feel like it's perfectly okay to call your teachers and their professors and their friends all kinds of nasty names. And we teach you that that's okay. That you can get away with that. We live in a society where police officers are abused on a daily basis, mostly by people your age who believe it's perfectly okay to call police officers all kinds of names and judges all kinds of names. It is totally unacceptable behavior. Yet, we have allowed you to do it. So he let her out of jail, and he backed that down to $5,000. And I thought, that is not justice. That is mercy. You see, judges have the power to judge, and they also have the heart to cry. Church, God is not just judge. God is not just your creator. God is the Holy One. He doesn't just know who you are, but he loves you. I got to tell you, I have never had a dog in my life where I made up excuses for it. Every time she have an accident, I tell my family, she's just a baby. You know, she's just a baby. Don't get mad. I buy her toys every week. It's like a grandchild or something. And I didn't buy the kids stuff. I bought a dog stuff, though. She's just a baby, though. She needs toys. And I bought her a bed, like, for every room in the house because she gets cold. She does. She gets cold. You know, and we got hardwood floors. She needs a bed in the living room. She got a bed in my room. I got her bed in my office. Some of y'all been up here. She come to work with me. She sit by the heater. She gets cold. She's just a baby, though. And so, you know, and I got to take her out, like, every 3 hours. But it's okay because she's just a baby. And I love that little dog. I wonder how many excuses God's made for you. I wonder how many excuses he's made for me. You know why? Because he loves you. He loves you like I love that little dog, like I love my kids, like you love your kids. God loves you. God's been making excuses for you your whole life. When are you going to stop making excuses for yourself? When are we going to stop making excuses? Church, we owe God. We owe him. Not because of what he's done, but simply because he is. I am. Moses says, who do I say send me? And God said, I am. If I was Moses, I'd have said, yeah, I know, finish that though. You are. And God said, no, that's it, period. That's it. I am. Done. Run along. I guess that's what we're going to go with. Yes. Because God simply is. Every time the word honor and respect comes up in the Bible, almost every time it says honor because of what that person did. But I found something interesting. In Proverbs 20:29, the text says that the glory of the youth is their strength. In other words, we like young people because they can help us move. They can lift couches and boxes and stuff. You ever move? You ever go get elderly? You know, want 50 elderly to sign up. No, we need them 18 and 20-year-olds. They're good, strong backs. I don't know if y'all noticed, 18 and 20-year-olds can't move nothing. Nobody taught them how to move anything. It's trying to lift stuff awkwardly. Just get to 70-year-olds. At least they know how to move it. They know how to pick it up. But that's what the text says. We like the youth because they're strong. But that same text, Proverbs 20, verse 29, says, the glory of the youth is in their strength, but the splendor of the old is in their gray hair. In other words, we owe honor to the elders and the elderly, not because of what they've done, but because of who they are. Simply because they have gray hair. They got gray hair? Well, I guess you owe them honor. You don't know what they did to me. Don't care. They get it's like golf. They get a little handicap because they have gray hair. I wonder what would happen in here on Sunday mornings if we would take this attitude out there with us. There are some of you I know who have horrible bosses. I know this, okay? Your employers stink. They put pressure on you. They give you stuff to do. They give you horrible timelines. They ask too much. They threaten. I know. But a biblical understanding of worship means we have a biblical understanding of giving honor to people because we owe it to them, no matter what they do. What would happen in here on Sunday mornings if we would practice that Monday through Saturday? If we would give honor, and I'm talking to old and young, by the way, I'm talking to everybody in this room. What would happen on Sunday mornings in our worship? What would we think and feel when we sing, when we raise hands or bow our heads or get on knees? What would we think if during the week we had been in the practice of giving honor and fear and reverence and respect? Here's a better question. What would happen in our life if we could take how we feel about God and transfer that to other people. Come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord, our God, our Maker. Not because of what he's done, but because he is our God and we are his sheep. Let's stand and sing. You are Lord.